And if you'd like to go ahead and start the video, Brother Kaiser, and then I'll say a few things about Japan.
Business and in every personal interaction, you have to be absolutely perfect. In a country obsessed with perfection, where does this leave those who fail? Failure in Japan leaves you with no path to redemption. You have shamed your parents, your ancestors, your nation, and your gods. You have no hope. Too many Japanese turn to historically accepted suicide. 3 Japanese commit suicide every hour, 25,000 people per year. Then there are many who aren't willing to commit suicide and choose a path of hikikomori. It is those who lock themselves in their bedrooms for 10, 20, or even 30 plus years. They have no hope, so they put pause on their life. This hopelessness doesn't just impact the minority. Loneliness and depression is a constant fact of life for the Japanese people. Families are breaking down. Fathers are absent. Some working so much, they see their family for less than an hour a week. 80% of Japanese wonder why they even exist. 10% wish they had never been born. Japan is a beautiful place filled with wonderful people, but it's like the whited sepulcher. It's beautiful on the outside and dead on the inside. God has entrusted us with the gospel of Jesus Christ. He has called my wife Esther and I to go to the nation of Japan, to Okayama Prefecture, to plant a church there in His name. I would ask you to join us in prayer for the Japanese people. The Japanese youth of today are 6 times more likely than the older generations to identify as Christians. The door is open in a way that we haven't seen since the end of World War II. There are 125 million Japanese. They are the largest unreached people group in the developed world. Pray for laborers for the field. There is one missionary for every 56,000 Japanese. The harvest is plenteous. The laborers are few. Our plan is to be in Japan by the end of 2024. Pray that the gospel has free reign, that the people of Japan see their need for Jesus Christ, that His name would be glorified, that indigenous churches would be planted, and that the Japanese people would find hope in their Creator, Jesus Christ.
Y'all see that that aerial view of the crowd in the mall? And something that kind of stood out to me after seeing that over and over again, you know, you see your own video a lot, is if you look at the men, you see something that says a lot about the Japanese culture. Almost every man walking in that mall had on almost exactly the same outfit. They had a white shirt, dark slacks. And that's just for a day out. You know, go to an American mall and you're just going to see a whole host of individuality expressed. The Japanese culture, as I've always had a fascination with it since I was a teenager, but especially since God's called me, I've been doing more of a deep dive into it, looking into the intricacies. And the more I learn about this culture, about their mindset, the more I can see that the Japanese culture is, it's almost the perfect snare for the people that are caught up in it. The more invested they are, the tighter their chains get. And they're raised from the day they're born to the day they die, that you have to be Japanese in every way, shape, or form. They have a term, they call it the do. I'm sure one of the most common that we know of is Bushido, the way of the warrior. They've got a do, or way, for just about every single aspect of life. And it doesn't matter if there's a better way to do things. No, this is the Japanese way of doing it, so you do it. We don't care what's in your heart. We just care about that you're putting on that outward show. And that is the exact opposite of what Jesus Christ wants from us. And so you're told from birth, do it our way, do it our way, do it our way. We don't care what you feel. Just do and keep going, because if you don't, you're shameful. And it's even expressed in the fact that they'll say that they're some of the nastiest people on the internet, and that's saying something. And the reason they're extremely nasty is because you can be anonymous on the internet. And so if you can't see me being nasty, that's okay. It's just that outward appearance, and that's an outlet for the pressures. Just what's in their heart is coming out. And you see the people, the high suicide rate. There's a place called, the name just left me, but it's the Suicide Forest. They have anywhere in this one small forest, it's 13 square miles, they have, on a good year, they have about 150 people kill themselves. On a bad year, it's about 400. And what you'll see as you walk around this forest, you'll see a string leading off into the forest. There's a 50-50 chance at the end of that string there's going to be a body. Because what they do is they'll tie the string off and they'll run it into the forest, because it's apparently a very confusing forest. It's easy to get lost in, even with the size of it. There's no animals in there, is my understanding. It's a very quiet forest, very demon-possessed, you could almost say, demon-oppressed. And so they'll take that string and go in there, so just in case they get cold feet, they can find their way back out again. That place is just a microcosm of what's going on in the Japanese people. They have no hope. Their culture just says, do, put on that show, and we don't care how you're feeling. And their society has brought them this way of Japan has brought them to the brink of economic collapse. They estimate that within 10 years, they're going to have one worker supporting one senior citizen. Currently, the population is 40% of the population is 65 and over. And that's just a ratio that doesn't work. And that's on top of people working 12 hours a day. And then you're told after you get done working, hey, the boss wants you to go out to the bar with them. And then you get home at 11 o'clock at night, and then you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to start all over again. And you do that 7 days a week. And because of this, young Japanese people aren't starting families. They're just getting wrapped up in this, and they're falling apart. And they're seeing their society come to that brink. And from their perspective, I mean, from anyone's perspective, they're seeing their society is putting a burden on their shoulders that they can't bear. And so at the end of World War II, they had seen their society bring them to just death and destruction like the world had never seen. And they were open to the gospel. Their faith in the emperor had been shattered. Their faith in their old gods had been shattered. And they had been seeking. But fortunately, enough missionaries didn't make it in there, and Japan closed again. Their hearts closed. The country's been open the whole time, but the hearts of the people closed. And they've come to another point where they're saying, hey, the way of Japan, it's not working. I can just imagine, this is just my thinking, if 6% of the young people, that would be teenagers to early 30s, have opened up and they're saying they're willing to look outside of what Japan has to offer, because the only thing Japan has to offer is death, and they can see that. What could Japan be in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years? Right now, less than 1% of the population is Christian. There's more of the hikikomori, those hermits that hide themselves in their bedrooms, than there are Christians in the entire country. But in 30 years, if the Lord opens the doors that much, Japan could be a completely different country. They say historically, 5 to 10% of a population becoming a certain religion has a huge impact on the entire culture. Usually you hear that in context of Muslims, but I would pray that, you know, if Christians are 10% of a population that's never had them like that, yeah, that they would turn Japan upside down. That Japan would be, well, instead of being a land of death, be a land of life and hope again. At this time, I'll go ahead and open it up for any questions. And just about any topic you want to ask me about Japan, I'm more than willing.
Are you all learning Japanese?
So currently, my wife and I are, and this is just the amazing technology, there's a website called Italki. And yeah, Italki. And what it is, it's a place for language tutors to make connections with people who want to learn language one-on-one. And so we have a sensei, which is their word for teacher. Sho sensei is in a prefecture of Tokyo. And so we have about 1 to 2 lessons a week with him. And so he's actually running us through. There's a copy of it on our table back there. Mina no Nihongo. And that is the primary textbook used by the language schools in Japan. And so my wife and I are going through that. And it's been an interesting... The language is, in a lot of ways, it's backwards from how we think. The sentence structure is different. Again, and it actually goes back to the do, the way, and I'm not sure what the word at this point, what their word for how they speak would be, but they have their ways of speaking, and it's situational. So if you're speaking about God, there's a certain form that you have to use. If you're speaking in a formal setting, there's a different form of Japanese to use. If you're speaking to a friend or a colleague, there's a form. If you're speaking to your spouse, there's a different form. So a perfect example is Ohio is their word for good morning. For my wife and my kids, I can just say Ohio. That would be proper. But if I'm speaking to a large group of people, to coworkers, people like that, I would have to say Ohayo gozaimasu. And the best way I could translate it, the gozaimasu, is something they add on that doesn't really have an accurate translation, but it would be like saying good morning politely and actually saying politely. So gozaimasu, the closest way I could translate it, is actually saying politely in your sentence. Good morning politely. So it's a different way of thinking, and that goes all the way through how they interact. So that is something where they estimate 2,200 to 3,000 class hours to learn the language to a fluent level. So we're, Lord willing, depending on how long we're on deputation, we should be anywhere from 10 to 15% of the way through that. Before we arrive on the field. And that'll at least have us to a conversational level and kind of be a jump start.
Learning how to speak it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to also learn how to read it and write it?
That's all tied together.
Oh, it is all tied together.
Yeah. Oh, and since you brought up the writing. So they have 3 different forms of writing. You have the kanji, which would be borrowed over from China, and that's where they've got a symbol and that is a word. Then they have an alphabet called hiragana, and that is an alphabet they use to write native Japanese words. Then they have another alphabet called katakana, which has no purpose that I can see other than it's Japanese, and it is used to write words they borrow into the language. And it is very much, Japan is a land of contradictions. So one thing that comes to my mind is there's a word, naifu. Can anyone take a guess what the word naifu means? It is a borrowed word into Japanese from English. What's that?
Knife.
And I'm looking at that going, well, let's see. So English speakers have been in Japan since the mid-1800s at the earliest. They had knives before that. Why did they borrow the English word for knife? I have no idea. But things like that just kind of scratch your head. And that alphabet is completely pointless because it is 1-to-1 a match with hiragana. Every letter has an equivalent in the other alphabet. So why they decided to have two alphabets? It would be like if English had a separate alphabet for all the French words we borrowed. And so you'll see a sentence with kanji, then it goes hiragana, then it goes katakana, hiragana, kanji, and just back and forth just in one sentence. So it can be kind of confusing. I think there's about 40 to 50 letters in each alphabet. And a lot of curly Q's, and a lot of them look exactly the same, but don't sound the same. So some of them, it'll be like a little squiggly line. And then the other one will be that same squiggly line with a circle on the end. And it would be a TA sound or a ZA sound or something completely different. You know, so it is definitely a learning experience. Okay. Do we have any other questions? Let's see, it's Brother John, right?
Yes, sir. So the primary hurdle in terms of presenting the gospel and overcoming their traditional religions, they're very steeped in like mysticism and traditionalism, are they not?
So and you'll see it on the back of my card, they are very much a land of contradictions, and I know I've already said that, but it goes to every aspect. Their primary religion is atheism. But the contradiction there is they will still follow the vast majority of those. If you ask them, might say, I don't believe in any gods, but I'm Shintoist or I'm Buddhist. And they still follow their family religion, what their parents followed. The biggest hindrance really, though, is just getting them to open up. And this isn't something that they do just because, you know, we're foreign. They treat others the same way. It will take them years before they're willing to listen to anything you have to say in some cases. We've got some friends that are in Hokkaido serving. They're missionaries there in near Sapporo. And he's had the same language teacher he's going on, I think, 3 years. And he was telling me, it took her, and she saw him 3 or 4 times a week for several hours a week, you know, each day, 4 or 5 hours in a day. It took her, I think he said, about 1.5 years before she brought up anything personal. Like, he didn't know if she was married. He didn't know if she had kids. You know, things that, you know, a lot of times you'll find out within an hour or two of speaking to an American here. It took him 1.5 years to find out anything about her. That's one of the reasons why I said the culture there has been almost perfectly designed by Satan to just tighten their chains. Because if you don't have that relationship, you know, they'll be very polite to you. You'll never know that there's a boundary there. But they'll go, I agree with everything you say, and then just toss it out as soon as they walk away. They just want to get away from you. And their culture basically says, unless they have that relationship with you, what you have to say really has no impact on what they're going to feel in their heart. Yes, sir.
I might have missed it, but do you know anyone over there? Are you connecting with anyone you ministry with? And along with that, I guess if you could answer that one first.
Yeah. So, I'm not one of those guys that thinks I'm just going to go out there and be Mr. Lone Ranger. To be honest, I think if somebody that had that attitude, I think would be very foolish to have that kind of attitude. So we have been making as many connections with missionaries there as we can. Because there's going to be a lot of pitfalls I've learned a lot of the pitfalls just from talking to other missionaries. They said, hey, we did this wrong, don't do that. Or, hey, work on this. And it is some of the littlest things that can be a hiccup for them. If you hear somebody here in English, speaking English here, not a big deal. If they have a thick accent, you can tell say they're from Africa or something, they have a thick Nigerian accent. My wife's doctor was a Nigerian. Not a big deal here. And in Japan, if you're a tourist, and you speak Japanese poorly, but understandably, hey, that's fantastic. You've learned Japanese. Great on you. But then now I'm going there and telling you that your entire way of life is leading you to hell and gives you no hope. Well, they're going to hold a missionary to a higher standard. And I've been told there's some missionaries that have had 20 years there and they still talk with a Texas drawl. And the Japanese look at that and go, hey, that's not the way we speak it. You've been here how long? So there's pitfalls like that that we've been able to learn about and work on. And I guarantee you, I don't know enough at this point, unfortunately, to know everything I even should be asking. But we are in regular contact with, there's a pastor in Hokkaido, Tony Evans. He's a missionary sent from Australia, and he is running a very successful church. He's got about 75 members, which for Japan, that's a very large church for Japan. And he's just invested himself in it. And so I've gotten a lot of advice. I talk to him one-on-one, probably about every 2 or 3 months. He's one of those people that he actually has his day planned down to the 5 minutes, and he actually keeps to it. And he has made some connections with us. We're praying about serving actually with a national pastor when we arrive in the country. Funny enough, when I made the video, I had Mount Fuji in there, and I was thinking Mount Fuji would be 10 or 12 hours away. Well, if the Lord continues to lead this direction, serving with Brother Enomoto Sensei, he is in Kakagawa, which is about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from Mount Fuji. So it's kind of funny, just I had it in the video and then find out Lord seems to be directing us to be right there, kind of in the foothills. And he's been a pastor for 40 years. He's got a good, solid testimony. He's got a history of being a mentor for missionaries. Brother Evans said that was his Japanese mentor. And we've also got there's a Facebook group for independent fundamental Baptist missionaries in Japan. And I'm doing more lurking in the background in it, just gleaning what I can. But definitely there's a connection there and they have like a yearly get together, like a camp style thing that they do there in Japan. And so we're definitely going to be plugged in with that. And grow stronger together, I guess you could say, and get that kind of support. And does that lead into your other question?
Yeah, I think you kind of answered it already, because I was wondering if they had, I guess I just think about sometimes even here in America, you can't really, I might be wrong, but my perspective on the Japanese culture, I've been kind of looking, as you look at all the nations of the world that are kind of like unreached and all that, it's just like they're very, very tight. It seems like cohesive, like culture. It's like if you come in there as an American or something, you have little chance of reaching them possibly just because you're threatening their whole way of life. And so I was just wondering if you did have a connection with like a national pastor, like Japanese or whatnot, I guess if they could like introduce you, you know, to the people as, hey, this is someone you can trust or whatnot. This is,
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, and that's another resource we were given, you know, because you're talking about you have to know their mind, and they're such a different, it's not like going to Europe where, the way Americans think came from Europe. So a book that was recommended is The Japanese Mind that we've been going through, and it's actually a Japanese psychology textbook, a university-level psychology textbook for Japanese universities. So, and that's been pretty enlightening. Brother Evans there in Hokkaido actually showed that to his people, had his people read through that, and what they told him is that they wished every missionary would read it before they started ministering. So getting that Japanese perspective is completely invaluable. And I mean, our main goal, honestly, with planting the church is to make it an indigenous church. There has been a historical trend, and I know this isn't just limited to Japan, of American missionaries trying to plant American churches in other countries. And in some places that works. In most places, honestly, it doesn't work as well as it could. And that's actually a hindrance for the Japanese, because they want everything Western except our religion.
Yeah.
They view it as a Western religion and not for the Japanese people, whereas, honestly, God is the God of the Japanese people. They just need to recognize that fact. Let's see, you had another question, didn't you?
Yes. Are there Japanese Bibles?
Yes, that is, Japanese is actually a language that's been a good number of translations. Right now, the primary one they use is called Shinkyaku. It's a good translation, and this is one of those areas where there hasn't been, you know, a good Baptist translation, I guess you could say. There's been other groups that have done it, not with the proper text and things like that. And there is an effort to make one that is more TR-based, Textus Receptus-based, but it's got a long ways to go. It's just getting ready to go into print for the first copy as they're going through revisions. It's got one big, huge, glaring problem for a Japanese person. I had mentioned that the Japanese language has a form for speaking about God, and this version doesn't use that currently. It doesn't use the proper form for speaking about God. So in a way, that version almost demeans God in the eyes of a Japanese person, lowers him down to a position where they would never lower their gods down. And here's a Christian giving them a Bible that lowers their God down to a base level. Which if Jesus wants to humble himself and come and die on the cross, but we need to lift him up as much as we can, because he is worthy of being lifted up in every way, shape, or form. So, Lord willing, down the road, that will be corrected. But currently, the best translation that's the most understandable is the Shinkyaku, and that's the one they accept the most of. Brother John, again?
To kind of dovetail with what Luke was asking there. It seems the Japanese people are going to best respond to a Japanese Christian, if you would, or pastor. Is there any formalized training going on with the Japanese Christians to train up pastors?
I have heard of a few schools there. One area that is very difficult in, even as I'm trying to do a deep dive and research everything I can about Japan, is English resources are limited, and I don't speak Japanese, and Google Translate is not the best, but I have heard of several. The majority of it, I do believe, though, is more on kind of a one-on-one basis, you know, missionaries or pastors training, and then, I mean, that's a format that works.
Are there currently any Japanese-speaking indigenous Japanese ministering that you're aware of?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh yeah, we're praying about serving under one.
Oh, that's right.
Enomoto, yeah. So no, there actually are a good number of solid men. The thing about there are no wishy-washy Christians, really, or very few wishy-washy Japanese Christians, because the step that they're taking, it's not uncommon for them to take 20 years before they actually will make a profession. They'll be attending a church for 20 years and maybe have made a profession privately. But their culture, for them to actually make it public and come out and say, yes, I am a Christian, they are facing ostracism from their entire family because they brought shame on their parents. A teenager that gets saved and tells their parents, probably a 90% chance they're going to get kicked out of the house. And told, not only have you shamed us, you've shamed your ancestors, you've shamed everything. I mean, it very much is a shame-based culture. So for them to take that step and say, I am basically, in their eyes, renouncing being Japanese to be Christian, they're sold on it. And so those that are, the vast majority of the Christians, the open Christians, are very solid as far as their stand and their how much they're going to get involved. So there are actually a good number of solid Japanese pastors and people like that. And the churches are very much smaller I would say probably the average is 10 to 15 people. But it's 10 to 15 people that are going to be there every service, that are going to be investing their time, their money, their effort into the ministry there as much as they can.
So their advantage can almost be their obstacle as well.
Yeah. Now, that same barrier between that I mentioned that my friend took a year and a half, that same barrier exists between Japanese people. You fit into the group, you don't stand out. And, you know, even in, like, talking about yourself, you don't talk about yourself much, because then that's making you stand out from the group. Any other questions? Brother Kaiser?
Yeah, just if you could explain how God calls you to that field and then also the local church fully behind you and kind of their support of you all.
Oh, of course, yeah. So now, if God calls you to something as a teenager, make sure you let your wife know. So when I was a teenager, my church would take us to Silver State in Colorado, Baptist Youth Camp. And I don't know if you all have ever met Dave McCracken. He was preaching, and God called me to surrender, and I surrendered to preach. And I felt that he was calling me to be a missionary to either Germany or Japan. Long story short, I thought God had set that aside. Because from the time that I was called as a teenager to the time I was actually sent was over 20 years. Where he actually called us to say, now is the time. And so I went to Bible college as a pastoral major. My thinking there, even it was in the back of my mind then, is that, you know, a pastoral major, if God does call me to be a missionary, well, I can still take what I've learned as being a pastor and apply it there, because that's, it's ministry. And so I graduated from Heartland in 2015, and we went back to Bakersfield. I dragged my wife, she's from Oklahoma City. I went back to Bakersfield to serve in my home church. I knew it was going to be through a pastoral transition. Pastor Sears had been there at that point for a little over 40 years. And God just laid on my heart, I needed to be there through that transition to be whatever blessing I could be to the church. And I didn't know what that was going to look like. In that time, I got to serve in just about every ministry you could imagine, from the junior church to I was a college and career director to the youth pastor for the last 2 years. And actually one of my favorites, which I was terrified going into it, was the 50 and above class. And that actually was just phenomenal. When you're dealing with senior saints, you can actually dig into the word a little bit more than you can with kids or teenagers or college and career for the most part. And so that was a huge blessing. So I got to minister to all the different age ranges. And Pastor Walker and I, he was the new pastor. He just celebrated a year at the end of February? Or beginning of March. At the beginning of March, he just celebrated a year as the pastor. As we were leading into him taking over and Pastor Sears officially retiring, God just started to kind of lay on our hearts that the plans that Pastor Walker and I had were I was going to be his assistant pastor, I would be running the school as the principal of the school, and just serving in all different ways, basically being his right-hand man in whatever he needed me for. And I mean, it was a great plan. But God had other things in mind. And about September of 2020, there was a missionary that came and preached. And it wasn't even about missions specifically. I don't remember exactly what it was. But while he was preaching, God said, now's the time to go to Japan. I went, now I've got a home. I'm getting ready to move into ministry here full time. Going to be doing this and doing that, God. You know, Japan, if you want me to go, I'll go, but it doesn't really fit into the plans we've already made, and you seem to already been leading. And he said, worked on us, and then I mentioned it to my wife, and this is where she got the shock. She's like, what are you talking about? You were called to go to Japan as a teenager. It's like, what, I didn't tell you? So give me that piece of advice. If God called you, even if he's put it on hold, let your wife know. And honestly, I hadn't even touched on this. God had really prepared my wife as well. Her dad was raised in Japan. He was a missionary kid for the 60s or It was 70s and 80s. 70s and into the 80s. He was there from about 5 or 6 years old till he was 17.
Wow.
And he said he thought Japanese. In his mind, he was more Japanese in his thinking. And as we're learning more about the culture, she goes, "That's why my family was like this." So we've always had a love for Japan. I've loved it since I was a teenager. She obviously loved it since she was, you know, this. The things of Japan were always around her growing up. And just in little ways, God was really just preparing us. And so we prayed about it for 6 months. I talked to Pastor Walker and said, "Hey, can you just pray about God's direction? We feel our time here is coming up to a close." And he was in agreement with that. He wasn't happy about that. Neither one of us were happy about that because we have a fantastic relationship. He's been such a good mentor to me. But we could both see that God was closing the door for me to be there at First Bible Baptist. And so when he was called, and I'll cut it close, I went in and I sat with him. I said, "Okay, Pastor, now that you're pastor, we've been praying about it for 3 or 4 months. Here's what God's burdened us with, either to plant a church, to go to Japan as missionaries, or to seek a pastorate." And he said, when I said missions to Japan, he said, "My heart leapt." That was his words to me. And we prayed about it for another month at our missions conference last April. The keynote speaker, which was already scheduled before I even told him this, the keynote speaker was Brother Harris from West Coast. He's the Far East director with BIMI. He was a missionary in Japan for over 20 years. And one of the missionaries at the conference are good friends of ours now, the Morgans, and they are on deputation for Japan. They were just starting on deputation. They were downstairs the first night, the Morgans, and Brother Harris starts going into all the bad things about Japan and all the hard struggles we'll look at, the language and this and the culture. And he says, "And don't you tell those missionaries downstairs, they might get discouraged." And I'm sitting there going, "You have no idea that God has been," and I went up to him afterwards and told him, "You had no idea God has been working on me for 6 months about going to Japan as a missionary." And just God opened the door, burden, you know, made it apparent to me and my wife. And so that Sunday we went down and we surrendered and we talked to Pastor Walker, and his words were, "If you came in here and you told me anything but missions to Japan, even missions to another country, I'd tell you you were wrong." And God had just really burdened his heart about it. And the church is 100% behind us. You know, we're the, and I do believe this is a program where they're number one supported missionary. And just the outpouring of love was just, these are people that are family to me. And they're sad to see us go, but they're happy to see us go serving God. And just it has been just one thing after another. I could just keep going on because God has just done so much in the last year. But that is basically the gist of how God called us. It is not a short story. God is very personal to each and every one of us. And he did make it very clear he wants us in Japan, and he's opened door after door after door. It's time, Brother Kaiser.